Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444 to the follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Call ID 17702. Or you can participate on Twitch itself. I keep an eye on the chat room. And also I do a co-broadcasting stream. That's where I actually stream the video live. And so just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. That's SFUONCALL. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is SFUONCALL@gmail.com. That's SFUONCALL@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is SFUOnCall. And I have a personal account called Paul France that you can contact me. I talk about SFB every once in a while, tech a lot more times, and also being Catholic, and I'll be happy to post things about those things that I find very amusing and delightful. And, of course, my account is PAULFRANZ. There's no T in that, so if you're from Pennsylvania, there's no T in France. And with that, and of course, this talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. This week, they released Nexus number 16 into PDF form into the various e-tailers. Also, coming tomorrow, April 3rd, to the Shapeways, there's going to be added the Romulan X Sparrowhawk. Romulan X ship Sparrowhawk AX light cruiser. Also, this past week, the cabin slug number 47 is now available on Warehouse 23, DriveThruRPG, and War Game Vault. So we're getting even more of those cabin slugs posted up on there, which I can't wait to grab a copy in certain cases, because that helps when it comes to getting those the SSDs, so I can share with you guys. I'm moving on to currently the SFB Online Tournament, which is the Sapphire Star Tournament 3. Final round is actually set to go with Bill Scheller. He's playing Klingon versus Andy Koch in the Liren. That should be a very interesting battle, you know, because you've got a Klingon, which is very drone-based, versus a Liren, who is meant to fight drone-based opponents. So it should be a really good fight. Also, what was brought up this past week is people having more time on their hands to play SFB Online, there was a brought up the topic of the Masters Tournament. Yes, the old Masters Tournament, which is always, I always thought it was a really interesting tournament in that you have to be able to play multiple ships. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to specialize on this one ship. And that's going to be whether it's going to be the Klingon or the Fed or the Zinni or the Gorn or whatever. The fun part about the Masters Tournament always has been you start with a randomly selected ship to begin with. The only thing you can do is say, okay, I don't want to fly this one ship to start off with. And then you fly that ship, then whatever ship you beat, then you have to fly that ship in the next round. So to me, that's always interesting because then you have to look at things from your opponent's perspective. And if you don't have an idea of what your opponent would do, well, actually, in theory, you shouldn't win the first game to begin with. But that might be just because you know how your opponent would defend himself against your ship, that particular ship. But you have to be on the opposite side and say, how do you approach attacking with that ship? But to me, it's always a different thing, which is, okay, knowing how the person's going to defend against what you're doing and what you want to do so that you're on the attack. So I'm actually going to be sending out an email and also open it up this upcoming weekend so that everyone can then join in the fray and join the Masters Tournament and have fun with that. Moving onward to the actual SFB Online client, I've actually done a few things. I mentioned that I worked on making the Federation Commander Room to be more like SFB, make it a little more friendly for people who play SFB, make it a little more consistent between the two rooms. I definitely found out that the way I did it was not exactly the best way of doing it. Now, there's certain things that I've got to think about because of things like fire and launching are still the old way, and I'm not sure if I need to modify those or not. But at the moment, I've removed the whole movement tab. Now I'm just using the game control window. And there's another thing I worked on actually today, which is I'm going to be releasing that probably next week. I want to get a few more enhancements in there before I do that, which is changing so the default settings for the Federation Command Room when it comes to what is in that game control window and where it is, what's the proportions of it are actually saved as a preset so that, you know, by default it brings up this and this, and that's going to be a lot more like SFB. The initial release didn't have that just because of I didn't know where it was in the code. It's been a while, you know, so forgive me. So but that's going to be available probably in a week, maybe two at max. Moving on to the library, there's unfortunately no progress when it comes to conversions. There has been obviously some bug fixes for the ships, and those have been posted to the library. So if you've been playing in the different campaigns, you'll be able to see that. And with that, the complete conversion still stayed 2,522, with yet to be converted as 799, which gives the percent complete when it comes to conversion to 75.94%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one thing, old Pumpkins, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, what we've got is we've got Barry, we've got Gary, we've got Dave, we've got, of course, me. Can't have it without me. Actually, I think we did have one show without me, because I gave control over to, I forget who it was at this point. Jeez. But I had one show where I was on vacation, so I let someone else run it, and I just listened in. You know, it was kind of one of those goofy things. I think I did that one time. So, Barry, Gary, how you doing?
Hey. I'm going to have to make tonight a short night because I have an early, you know what? I'm going to skip what I was going to do tomorrow, so it won't be that early. I need to go to a store at some point before I got to work.
Okay.
But I'm going to delay that till one more day.
Okay.
That means I have a 6 a.m. wake up instead of a 5 a.m. wake up.
Yikes. That's always rough.
Okay.
But, yeah, just a quick...
No.
Actually, quick update.
We can't even talk about...
We'll talk about the quick set in just a moment. I want to do some quick updates on last week. Number one, I emailed Steve Cole about getting some Andromedan ship cards for the Federation Commander. He hasn't responded back yet. I just sent him another email about it. Hopefully he'll see it this time. Maybe he thought it was another... I can't imagine it being a piece of spam, but I didn't put Federation Commander on it, so, you know, I think he likes when you do something like that to particularly point out what you want to talk to him about. I'm going to wait for a couple of days. If I don't see anything probably by Sunday, I will post something on one of the discussion boards, either the SFU discussion board or on the FedCom, BBS, one of those two. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, as we Gary was mentioning before we got talking, you know, on the pre-show, before I actually started recording this, that is that he posted a post on the discussion board to talk about a Metal Gears tournament. And one thing Gary actually brought up was the idea, which was the idea of having it victory point based, basically. So that the mm-hmm. difference in BPV would not count. Wouldn't matter. You wouldn't have to modify the ships at all. You can just use the current ships as they stand. Maybe some minor modifications using commander's options to upgrade them a little bit. But instead of just being a purely win-loss, you get things based on victory points. Did I get that right, Gary? Is there anything in particular about using victory points?
Well, yeah, basically, in the standard victory points, there's one of the things that does is that if you have the cheaper ship and you're still in the fight by the end of the second turn, then you get that point difference as victory points to you. So now if you get blasted in the first round, then I guess it doesn't really matter. In the first turn, then that's too bad. But basically, it's a way in which ships that have a significant point difference. So basically, the player who thinks that they're going to be acing the league or whatever by picking the most expensive ship they can, they might end up finding that if they don't, you know, back that up by, you know, winning so quickly, that they're basically losing those points in the overall scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if the tournament encourages things, or the league rather, encourages things like capturing a ship or whatever, because that there's difference in terms of point values for that sort of thing as well. And
sure.
Then you'd basically be a way to, and also you could even throw in some of the interesting mid-year ships, like for example, the Federation have the old heavy cruiser,
mm-hmm.
and the Kazintis have called the CAM. It looks kind of like their tug. And the Lyrans even mm-hmm. have a thing called the Royal Panther, which basically looks like, it's like if you take a Panther-like cruiser and fill in the bits in the middle, and it's like a prototype battle cruiser, but it's less powerful than the Wildcat. So those kind of things and so forth. And actually, speaking of Lyrans, they wouldn't have capacitors. So
right.
You'd have that to consider as well. So, and also, when it comes to Omega, you can do the same thing. So, for example, if you use the Zosmans, if you take the Zosman heavy cruiser, you leave out the warp brief fit. And it looks like it's a cheap ship, but once you start factoring in the extra weapons and things you can add onto it and so forth, it starts climbing a little bit. But, so basically it's a way in which you can try and basically hold things a little bit differently. Right. Like I was even suggesting in the BBS, like get rid of the current tournament map and maybe have a location map where you've got, like, say, a Class M planet in the center. And you can only go so many hexes away from the planet before you disengage.
Right.
And that's basically like a hexagon rather than a square
right.
that you're playing on. So actually, just give me 1 second.
Right.
Well, what are you trying to do there, Gary? Because it sounds to me like that's more of a standard game, not a tournament game.
Well, the idea, I think, Okay. Go, Barry.
Because the whole point of a tournament is that I have a balanced ship, you have a balanced ship, we each pick a ship, and it doesn't matter which empire we take. They should be on fairly even footing. And for the most part, it's like I pick one, you pick one, and done. Whoever wins, wins.
But at the same time, Barry, the biggest issue with that...
standard.
Yeah, the biggest issue with that is that to achieve that... what do we normally have to do?
We have to design early year ships.
Yeah, we actually have to modify the current ships as they stand.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think...
which is a process that that they went through with the standard tournament cruisers.
Oh, understood. But the idea is this, a different kind of tournament. Now, I'm assuming that the victory points would still be use to decide whether you won or lost, and possibly if we want to decide when it comes to how well the person did, you know, kind of rankings, we can do a differential on the victory points between the two people to come up with who's the best, you know, best to worst. In when it comes to round, you know, if you want to have like an open play versus rounds, I can see doing that. Now, obviously, the one thing that was brought up was the whole thing with an open map. Open maps don't work. They suck. They draw out play and make the game just interminably long. And that's why I think why Gary mentioned the idea of location-based, i.e. you have to be within a certain number of hexes of a certain fixed location. Otherwise, you're considered disengaged. So it's still kind of an open map per se, but not too open.
Mm.
No.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, if you look at the standard tournament as it is right now, there's already a kind of unofficial hierarchy of ships. Like we were talking about the Sultorian last week about how the nature of the tournament format doesn't really suit Sultorians very well. And also, because the standard tournaments is like a winner-take-all, like it's usually like a series of knockout rounds, so the loser gets nothing, basically. Whereas, mm-hmm. so you're already in a situation where the ships are not, I mean, they'll probably never be perfectly balanced because that's just the nature of the game itself. But if you basically go with the premise that we know they're not going to be 100% balanced with each other, but that's part of the point of it. But if you set it up so that the loser still gets points for doing well, like if you, you know, like, you know, if you cripple the other ship and stuff but still lose, then you still get something and so forth. And you're doing it as a round robin, like a league table, rather than doing it as a knockout round, then you're basically giving both players in any given match more of an incentive to try and do well and also try and work out the ins and outs of their ship and stuff. So that's kind of like where I want
well,
to get at.
Well, the only problem with that is, okay, so we're going to take earlier ships, and you take a cruiser, and I take a police boat, and then I play keep away for a couple of rounds.
Well, the thing is that, well, first of all, just to clarify, it would be middle years, not earlier. So, and also, yeah. On the BBS, there's like a list of ships that you take. So it wouldn't necessarily be squadron-based, although Federation Commander does have a squadron-based tournament set up. So you would basically take one cruiser.
Oh, yes, I do remember that one.
And the options would be given to you. So, for example, if you were the Lyrans, you would choose either the standard heavy cruiser with no refits, or the they have a thing called the Royal Panther early battle cruiser, which is about 130-odd points. So it's around the same cost as the Tiger itself. And like it's one of those kind of quirky middle year ships that doesn't really exist in later time periods, but it still makes the period more interesting. So those are basically the options that you have. And as I say, I mean, you can't get too far from the location, like the planet or whatever. Now, I wouldn't necessarily make the planet active. So if you have a soldier or player, they can't feed off the planet to survive. But there'd basically be... not too far, because I mean, if you try to run off too far, then you disengage and you lose, whatever. So, but I mean, this is still like, we're still in kind of like the workshopping mode of this kind of setup or whatever. So, basically, it was just I kind of wanted to, you know, put it up there because part of the inspiration behind going to the BBS with it was the talk that we had last week. So, I was just curious as to if you had a chance to check out what was being discussed that week, any thoughts on it.
Oh yeah, I saw it.
I didn't.
Yeah, Barry rarely checks the BBS these days. Correct?
Yes.
Okay, just
that's correct. I know.
I know you mentioned it before, and that's the only reason why.
I still have to check. Yeah.
But yeah. I watched. I've looked at the discussion a little bit, and obviously, there are some naysayers. And of course, I think the same issue is going to apply with any tournament format. And Lord knows, I think the Federation Commander tournament format that we had started tweaking for the Federation Commander, I think we were doing a pretty good job overall. Let me go back to that. And that is when we actually had a Federation Commander tournament running on SFB Online. One of the things that we tried to do, which I think really worked well, it was squadron based. But what would happen is that, okay, we have a certain number of BPV, and that squadron, the amount of BPV could be modified by a multiplier because of certain fleets worked better than others. So depending upon how good of a fleet it could, that empire could possibly produce, you would actually have either a one, or I don't think we have anything less than one. I think always one, or you could have a 1.2 modifier. So the BPV, you can multiply, you can have a BPV times 1.2. So you actually would get more BPV than your opponent because of your ships usually don't do as well. And that's how we made RPS not nearly as much, a factor, is by having those multipliers. Which I thought was a pretty good idea overall when it comes to Federation Commander. Now, that's also design your own squadron also, versus what Gary is talking about is, okay, we have these certain ships that you can select. I'm not going to say you can select any ship that is available during the middle years. We're saying, okay, these are the ships that you could fly that are middle year ships, which is a different thing. Obviously, we're still going to have that whole issue of RPS. For those people who don't know what that stands for, it's rock, paper, scissors. That is, depending upon who your opponent is, you can do better or you can do worse. For example, what's a good example? I'm thinking about when it comes to RPS. When it comes to normal tournament play, a Fed can do like 50-50 against an Andromedan. But when it comes to Andromedan versus an Orion, basically it's 90-10 in the Orion's favor. The Andromeda has just almost no chance of actually winning in that battle. The 10%, in my mind, usually comes down to an additional hit that the Orion takes, and he fails. That's the 10%.
Yeah, or you have an inexperienced player playing the Orion.
Exactly. Well, Bear, the whole thing of the RPS is equivalent opponents. And then usually the chart is adjusted for what the current tactics are of that ship versus, when it comes to the matchup. Now, always, Civil War is always considered 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Big surprise. But, other things have those percentages. I'm not sure where the RPS chart is these days. Because I know we were the tournament group was actually maintaining a chart of, what's the RPS do you think these days of this versus this, and so forth.
Right.
And I'm sure you'd run into the same issue with middle years when you have opponents which are not naturally matched up against each other. Liren versus Gorn, things like that. The Liren is not designed to fight off a Gorn. It's designed to fight off an empire that has drones. You know,
drones.
You know, that's what the ESG is designed for.
Right.
Also, ramming speed. But even that is a rare thing. You know, because of, you know, people like doing the ramming when they can, but if you have a person with a lot of drones, you're not going to be doing the ramming as nearly as much.
Right.
But yeah, so I figured I'd bring up that one. With that, I think, why don't we move on to the Quixa?
Oh boy. yeah. I'm not sure if I have enough time at this point to go over them.
Okay. Well, if you want to, we can skip that and talk about that at another time.
Why don't we do that? Because probably another 10-15 minutes, I'm probably going to have to go to sleep.
Okay.
So,
no problem.
Yeah. But I am saying, well, yeah, I will put some prefatory remarks about the Quixa.
Okay.
Have you looked at the Quixa Valor Cloud in any detail?
No, I have not had a chance to look at the Quixa Cloud.
I will mention a couple of things about that. They go, oh. Okay. Any non-Quixa ship in the cloud takes 1 point of damage to they want every hex they move.
Whoa.
So if you move speed 20, you took 20 points of damage. And you can distribute it around any shields you want, but you're taking 20 points of damage that turn, just for moving.
Whoa, 20 points damage just for moving.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Every time you move a hex, you take a point of damage.
Okay. That's got me intrigued. Okay.
And if you fire a weapon, could be direct fire, plasma, drone, whatever, you take 20% feedback. And that feedback is based on the maximum theoretical damage the weapon can do, whether or not it hits. So if you fire a P3 at range 4, but it would have done maximum of 4 points of damage at range 0, you take 20% of the 4, not 20% of whatever it would have been when it hits. So, let's say you fire 4 overloaded photons and they all miss.
Oh, boy.
You took 20% of 64 points of damage.
Dang. I think we took slice class 5 with Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
Yeah.
It's not even limited by your speed. Dang.
Yeah. You fire a drone, you take. Basically, you fire one drone, you take a point of damage for firing the drone.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, definitely.
You fire a plasma S, you took 5 or 6 points of feedback for firing a plasma S. 12 if it was an EPT.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, one thing to bear in mind is that if you have a living ship like an Alunda or Blanthodon, there's no damage scored through moving through the actual kind of cloud, but there'd still be damage if you're firing something. And also, any unit that, like for example, if you use a displacement device or RIN quantum transporter, they don't count as movement per se, so you wouldn't get damaged with those either. But getting the RIN into the Kickstarter cloud is the trick. And also, fortunately for the Kickstarter, the Alunda and Branthanons are over on the far side of the Octon, so.
Yeah, fortunately for the Quixel. Yeah, just mentioned that. I read that. Hover slip.
Unfortunately for the Kixa, if you're an empire that's not interested in, you know, fighting in open space, you're more interested in landing plants and assimilating the locals, then you've got problems because the Sigvarians were able to get enough of their ship to be able to land on the planet and then start infecting the locals. And then once that happened, then they were able to basically absorb most of the Kixa species. So the Kixa basically became exiles, the ones that were non-infected. And that played a big role on when they eventually managed to get back into the cloud. They became very paranoid about the Sigvarians and stuff. So they designed their subsequent ships to be able to, like, you know, in case they ran into that kind of trouble again. Or, like, if they have any ships designed to trade in open space, they'd rely mostly on their speed rather than sticking around to fight. So it wouldn't quite be like the Belasco, where the Belasco would be traitors, but they'd expect to fight somewhere along the way. So the Kixa are more likely to want to run from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but... I just want to point out that that cloud is brutal.
That definitely sounds brutal.
Yeah. The Quixa ship can be pretty tiny and still have a good chance because whoever's fighting them is fighting themselves.
Dang. Yeah, because it sounds like if you're fighting in the cloud and you're not in one of the clear spots, because I was noticing that at the beginning of the description of the cloud, and that there are clear pockets in the cloud, which they think they don't know why there actually are clear pockets in the cloud. It's weird.
But a better way of putting it is we don't know why there is a cloud in the first place.
Good point. But yeah,
any Quixa ship, if you don't put it in the cloud, it's going to be toast against anything fighting it.
Understood. So overall, and when it comes to tournament play, you know, obviously that makes it really difficult to do. And from the sounds from Gary, that when it comes to the history of the Quixa, that when encountering another empire, that they'd just rather just run away than try to duke it out at any point in time.
Well, they can't. Their ships are designed to be used in the cloud exclusively. Outside the cloud, they're very weak. Let me give you an example. They have ultra warp missiles, which are nasty, nasty missiles. Speed 128.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're basically, they move four times an impulse.
Texas. Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah. I can't remember. I was checking the rules a few minutes back. I'd have to go back and look. But it's either like 4 or 6 points of damage to kill one. It does 2 points of damage if it hits outside the cloud. That's it. Hits you, does 2 points of damage outside the cloud. Inside the cloud, it does an additional 8 points of damage to the facing shield and 2 points of damage to every other shield.
Wow.
So it went from a 2-point warhead to a 20-point warhead with enveloping characteristics.
There's also an alternate pick warhead, which they mainly use outside of the cloud. It does 6 points of damage, but it has no effect inside the cloud itself. As in, like, it doesn't trigger the cloud's reaction.
Right. A lot of their weapons, like the energy spark ring, do double damage in the cloud. And then, so it's like a weapon. Outside of the cloud, inside of the cloud, it's like, well, doubled.
Right.
Like, oh.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Gauss cannon. It's like phasers.
Yeah. Right.
And the.
But you can give it an extra point of energy, and it does extra damage inside of the cloud.
Yep. I agree. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, could that be worked out?
You know, but it might be, if you took a root chip that had, it would certainly make for different tactics.
Yes. Well, in theory, the question for me when it comes to tournament play is, could you kind of do a compromise, i.e. have it so the weapons do damage like they're in the cloud, but they're not, you're not fighting in a cloud, i.e. your opponent doesn't take the damage.
Get rid of the feedback, get rid of the movement damage.
Right. But allow the effects of the weapons to be the same.
I could see that as a tournament special rule, yeah.
Yeah. I can see that more closely working than, when it comes to overall, being quote unquote fair, definitely something I would think it's worth looking at the very least,
Yeah.
We can examining the weapons a lot more closely next week when you have a little more time.
Yeah.
And I will definitely make sure that I'm all set to go on those weapon systems and see maybe they with that minor adjustment, maybe they could actually be used in tournament play. You never know.
That's a possibility. Yeah. All right. I do need to head out, though.
Okay.
See ya.
Okay, see ya.
Night, everyone.
Night.
Bye.
Oh, come on. Don't mind me. That's better. That's better. Okay. I was looking for a ship that was a little better than a 100-point heavy cruiser. They have a 120-point command cruiser, then... Because I said, come on, was because I saw the Quicks Dreadnought, which is 220 points. I went, no, I don't think we can let people play that ship. Don't think so. But as I mentioned before, when it comes to BPV, it's a number that in my mind always is denoting how well it does as part of a fleet, not in individual combat. So, and Lord knows, I know that obviously in tournament play, there is the whole issue with modification of, okay, you have the tournament barrier. You don't have full EW. You have really simplified EW. You can use, cloaking in its EW capacity. You can use the Wild Weasel for its EW effect. But that's about it when it comes to EW at all. But, you know, you can't have a rag maneuvering. You can't do, I have to double check, but I'm pretty sure you can't use the benefit, the EW benefit from using passive fire control, long-term passive fire control, which I think it takes 2 turns for it to take effect, if I recall correctly. It's been a while when it comes to that obscure rule. Because how often do you actually have someone playing with passive fire control? I mean, long-term passive fire control like that. So. Now. When it comes to getting back to the Andromedans for a bit. I'm hoping to enroll Steve Cole and actually get a couple cards, you know, at the very least. I'm asking for the whole fleet, you know, all of the Andromedan ships, but at least just a couple samples so I can have the cards so I can implement the rules and test the rules and so forth. I have to double check the rules again and how to implement them. Because I remember there were some quirkinesses. Of course, there's big differences between SFB and FedCon when it comes to the way the PA panels interact. Which is going to be interesting. Do you remember, Gary, if the transporters work the same way? I'm pretty sure they do. You have to have like additional power depending upon the size of the satellite ship. The transporter power required to transport the ship out of the mothership or into the mothership is different. Gary, you there?
Okay. I'm just checking now.
Okay. Oh, okay. Ask for trouble by doing this, but because I know that like the TR beams are pretty much the same, so are like the Dizzy Dev, yeah, obviously some minor differences there because of just like photons. Photons in SFB require warp energy, and so does the displacement devices for the Andromedans. But when it comes to FedCom doesn't make a difference. But usually they remove that requirement that it has to be warp power because power is power. That's a question. Gary, you know actually if there's a concept of suicide freighters in SFB?
I don't think they have them in FFA, no.
Okay. I was thinking the same thing. But, you know, because I don't remember ever seeing them, you know, the idea of suicide freighters. You know, basically, really big seeking weapons is what they end up being, though. Okay, I just brought it up. Okay. There's a defensive fire, big surprise. Suicide fire combat as regular fighters do, except they move a seeking weapons target on an enemy base. Right. You can't make a kaiju turn, but bum, bum, bum. Right. Da, da, da. When the suicide server enters the hex of the enemy base. There's no defensive fire. The fire explodes in defensive fire phase, causing a damage amount equal to the damage to the base equal to 10 times the number of undisabled cargo boxes. You could only tractor a suicide freighter if it ended an impulse in the hex adjacent to the base or some other friendly unit. A ship on the same side as the freighter, suicide freighter cannot tractor or tow the suicide freighter, but an enemy ship could. Cargo boxes, which are disabled and later repaired, do not count. Interesting. I'm surprised. Actually, no, that might be a different one. I was just thinking about that is capturing a suicide freighter. I'm assuming that you actually, if you knock down the shields, you can actually capture a suicide freighter and then take control of it. Actually, that reminds me. I don't think there's actually a concept of boarding parties except for hit and run raids in FedCom. Morning. Okay. This one. Get back. Okay, we have 5F. Where's 5F? 5L. Bum, 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 bum. 5S boarding parties. You can do hit and run raids. Oh, you actually can capture an enemy ship. Okay. It is possible, and it's somewhat rare, to actually board a ship and capture. This is difficult as the target ship will probably have far more Marines on board. Oh, yes. I still remember that one tactic paper for FedCom, which was always to leave at least one boarding party behind on your ship. Otherwise, you risk the issue with your enemy using their boarding parties to take over your ship while you're trying to take over their ship. I remember that tactic, which was interesting to say the very least. It's like one of those things. It's like, surprise, I took over your ship. What? You lose. It's like, oh no. Did you find it, Gary?
Look under 5V if you have revision 6 or the reference rule book.
I'm pretty sure I do. Okay, 5V, 5S, special. Oh yeah, special sensors, jeez. 5E and Drummond Systems, right? Got the hangars and the satellite ships launching. So launched by transporter, right? Displacement device by can be blah blah. It can be okay. Launching requires energy, requires more power than just moving a few Marines. Launching or recovering a small ship costs 3 points. Okay, yeah, it is based on the size. Small is 3, medium is 4, large is 6. Use half the amounts in fleet scale. Which, oy. To me, that was, I applaud ADB's effort to create a tactical game and the idea of speeding play up. But obviously, in my mind, the fleet scale was a failure. The idea of a fleet scale was a failure. I'm not sure. Fleet scales are nice if you want to allow for the idea of using a squadron and fleet scale together. To, you know, obviously fleet scale is going to be, I'm assuming it's half BPV of what the squadron scale is, though I think the numbers are on the card. So, you know, the idea is to make a balanced well, relatively balanced. You always have that RPS thing going on between two opponents. Now, of course, in FedCon, we still to this day, there's been no resolution on the whole plasma issue. You know, and that is that the plasma empires have a hard time of it versus anybody because of so many. It's so easy in FedCom to go fast versus SFB. And I forgot what some of the solutions. And of course, you have the whole issue of open maps. Open maps are always a deterrent when it comes to plasma, because the only thing, because with open map, you know, the only what you can do with plasma is you can actually, all it does is it pushes the opponent away. That's all it does. With an open map, and in that case, it actually brings up an excellent point, which is actually for any overall battle, which is open map versus location-based map, i.e. there is a object, a location, where you're fighting over. That I think that's why I think in some battles, scenarios, the whole idea, if you ever face a fleet in an open map, the whole idea of an open map is that you have one force trying to slow down the other force. Now, you know, obviously the whole idea is to have one get around the other, and I'm sure, you know, it's on a strategic level, you know, you can see the guy coming towards you, so that you're going to go out and meet him in combat in open space as a kind of delaying action. Versus, you know, trying to completely destroy his fleet. Yeah, that'd be nice. Or have him turn back. But at the same time, it's mostly a delaying action. Because there's only so much you can do to make it so that they can't get past you. And that's usually for another object which is farther on, whether that's a base or a planet or something along those lines, or maybe another fleet, you know, that, you know, like you have refugees that you're trying to let to escape, and you're sending your fleet in to destroy those ships so that word can't get out of what actually happened. Though, you know, obviously that's always weird when you have transwarp, really, or communication, where you can actually communicate over long distances instantaneously, you know, which to me was always a weird concept, because currently the ships can only fly up the fastest warp speed. But in Star Trek, you can communicate immediately through, you know, multiple sectors of space really quickly. And then, of course, then to me, there's always the whole time dilation issue overall. You know, because you're going faster faster than the speed of light. That's actually, in that case, that's always weird when it comes to observations, because one of the things that you, like, you say that you have a star which is going to be exploding. Well, you can go faster than the speed of light. So therefore, you can actually watch that star explode multiple times, because you're at this one warp, You know, you're close by. You can see it explode. You can travel at warp speed, which is faster than the speed of light, out a certain distance, and then take another observation of the light that's coming from that star. Now, of course, there is the different wavelengths, and those wavelengths will, the speed, you know, will define that. I mean, the wavelengths will define the speed that that light actually travels. So, as I'm just going on. But yeah, the satellite ship stuff is not that hard when it comes to implementing. It's, as I said, it is the PA panels which are difficult. Yeah. Right. The space device, just like the photon, where you have to, it takes two turns to charge it. And after you charge it, then you can use one point of power to hold it. Oh, yeah. Don't mind me. I'm just checking to see if it has the one rule, which always was kind of weird. On self-displacement. No, you still have it. No, you don't. Oh, I forgot that. I got. I'm just looking at the displacement device. And the one thing that they removed in FEDCOM when it comes to displacement device is there is no 6-6 roll. That is, if you roll 6 when you're doing self-displacement, you're stuck. It's not like SFB where you're stuck, but then you can roll another 6 and see if it is a random, another D6, see if it's a random displacement. If you roll another 6, it's a random displacement. And at that point, then you roll for distance and direction. And even with, and the weird part for that one is even with the random displacement, you can actually have some control of the random displacement. So you can say that, okay, if random direction is direction 1, well, I want to go direction 3. So instead of going direction 1, if you roll 1, it goes direction 3. So you have a 2/3 chance of going direction 3. So, which is, to me, always was been interesting. I liked it because of, Lord knows, sometimes the worst thing that could ever happen to an Andromedan when it comes to self-displacement is that you go nowhere. At least with a random displacement, you have a chance of going somewhere where you want to go. They have actually have overall, in my mind, you have a 2/3 chance of going at least in the direction that you want to go. Now, obviously, the issue there is then distance. If you only go 1 hex, it doesn't help you all that much. If you roll, you know, if you have a 50% chance of rolling this is the 4-6, which actually can matter a great deal, versus like 1 or 2. So, you know, that's a failed displacement is where you go nowhere is really, really awful for the Andromedans. Okay. Where I don't see the PA panels. Okay. But anyway, okay. We'll probably next week we'll probably discuss the Quixus some more, and some other topics. Overall. I'm sure we'll also pick up another empire to discuss. I think we definitely we talked about the Bosco. What else? What other empires are there that we had not discussed?
Baldwin?
I forget what else is there discussed about the Zosman? Because I know we've discussed that. I'm just not sure.
Well, what did you cover with them last time?
Well, the thing is with Zosman is there's not much to discuss overall. Because of, unlike some of the other empires, the Zosman, the only particular system that's Zosman is the field. You know, based on the kind of cloaking device that they have. They don't have any specialized weapons that are just theirs because of they choose whatever phasers they want on the ship. And that could be any number of phasers. You can have if you have six phaser mounts in a Zosman ship, you can actually have six different phasers on that Zosman ship. And then of course, then there's the normal weapon mounts and the system mounts, the system boxes, which are varied, but overall they're just a duplicate of what is available to, you know, on that, through the Omega Octant. Now, the one thing that was obviously brought up by the rules themselves is that just like the Orion, you usually have a territory which you work in, and then you have the whole idea of local weapons that you have access to, and, you know, obviously, if you're working in that territory, you know, that then you would focus on that. Now, in tournament play, everything's considered local, so you can have anything. Now, the one thing that we definitely discussed last week, which was the whole issue with all the different kinds of weapons. And some of them are really darn powerful. I think Barry was mentioning how the implosion torpedo was really powerful. And he's surprised that the Zosman could actually have that available as a weapon. You know, obviously there are certain weapons which are not available even to the Zosman. I think like the Soldra weapons, the Lunda weapons, like the Biobolts. The bio whip, I think bioelectric whip, I think it was called. Basically, ones where there is a biological portion to the weapon. So, Branthenon weapons, those are, well, they're part of the actual dragon itself. So, it's hard to actually steal a weapon that's part of an actual living creature, which is why you can't have the biobolts. So that was mainly what we discussed last week when it comes to the Zosman. Is there anything else that we missed? Gary, do you think there's anything we missed? I know we talked about the Iridani. Oh, that's one thing we might just want to cover them overall, which is the FRA. And that is just because of the FRA they do have some unique characteristics versus normal Federation or Klingon, or I think they even have ESGs because they have some, I think there's some Lyrans in their Republic. So, given that, obviously you have the varied photons from the FRA. I'm not sure about the rest of the weapons. Obviously, I think more to the point for the FRA, that it is going to be the ships themselves, which are kind of unique because of, I can easily see combination ship, you know, a ship that has a combination of both photons and disruptors on the same ship. Now, I've not actually looked at the FRA ships myself, so that's something we might want might be bringing up next week after I take a look, see at the ships. So, any other topic you want to discuss, Gary?
Nothing strange to mind right now. But okay. Their destroyer does have mixed photon. Actually, I would recommend check Captain's Log 53 because there's five SSDs for the Klingon and Lyran ships in FRA space, and there's also an FRA update file in there.
Whoa. Klingon Lyran? That would be interesting.
Four Klingon, one Lyran.
Oh, okay. Whoa. For a moment, I thought the whole idea was a Lyran ship with drone racks. Which to me is like, wow, what's the point of that one? Because you couldn't bring up your ASGs while you're launching your drones. And of course, we all remember the incident when it comes to the one of the carriers for the Lyrans, where the commander of the carrier brought up the ESGs right before launching the fighters and killed many crew members. So that was a bad thing. So yeah, I'll make sure that I scan those things in, and I'll make sure that Barry will have a copy so he can look at them, because I don't think he's gotten any of the captain's logs either. So I think with that, Gary, we will call it an evening. Yeah, I know Dave. Dave's just mentioned that FRA is a thinly veiled attempt to get alpha players into the Omega by including portions of the game they're used to. I tend to agree with that statement. When it comes to FRA, the FRA is interesting in the way that they were brought in. You know, the planet where they were located got displaced into the Omega Octant. They're not sure how, you know, and that happened. I'm assuming it happened a few times. I'd have to go back and look at the history of the FRA. But okay, with that, I think we will end this evening. Gary, it's always a pleasure to have you on and be able to talk to you.
Have a good night, Tom.
Okay, you have a good night. So, had a nice little quick discussion about the Quixa. We'll probably discuss a little more next week. We'll finish up our discussion, and I'm hoping to talk about the FRA some, and actually show some of the SSDs so that we can look at them. You know, the question obviously is that how would they be different versus, you know, other alpha, because the one my thing about the Omega tournament cruisers overall is that I think it's foolhardy and to try to balance the Omega with the alpha because they're not designed to fight each other. Now, my assumption with that is that with the FRA, those ships that are part of that empire are modified enough so that they're more to the, not liking, but closer to fighting the Omega ships with more equalitude. You know, they're closer in capabilities than an alpha. You know, obviously, I think that would make it doable to play with the FRA. Obviously, the big thing that is good about the FRA is that they don't have plasma. Because if they had plasma, then we'd have a big issue. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.